Live from the backstretch at historic Saratoga Racecourse, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow. Racing Across America is brought to you by Pennell's Restaurant, a Saratoga tradition since 1922, 284 Jefferson Street, Saratoga, just minutes from the track, and the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany. When you can't make it to the track, make it to the Clubhouse Racebook.
Good morning and welcome to Racing Across America on this Thursday, live from Saratoga, our Clear Court location. As we said during the handicapping show, a gorgeous morning up here at Saratoga. Sunny, very comfortable. Should be a great afternoon of racing as well, if you'd like to swing by and enjoy. Coming up a little bit later on, regular in our Thursday Daily Racing Forum rotation, Mike Welch will be in. We'll do a little preview and review with Mike coming up a little bit later on towards the end of the program. Ramon Dominguez will join us. I've been at a couple of things over the past month or so that Ramon has attended, and I've had some conversations with him, and I said, you know, it'd be fun to have you on the show. And then yesterday he drove by me in a golf cart, and I thought, why don't we do it tomorrow? And so he'll be in today, again, a little bit later on. But top of the show, another guy I've been chasing for a while because he got off to a great Saratoga meet, which continues. Been inviting him for a while now, so here we are last week. Mark Hennig in the seat. Mark, good morning.
Good morning. Nice to be here, Seth.
Yeah, happy to have you here. And again, we've had you on the show before, not in probably a couple of seasons. So for folks who are new, talk a little about how you got into the game. And when I ask people that, it's either like, well, my uncle brought me to the racetrack and he got through it through the betting, or the family was involved with you. There was a family.
Right. Yeah. My father trained horses, grew up around Ohio. We raced at Beulah Park, River Downs, Summit Churchill. So, you know, myself and my sisters, you know, we, as soon as we were old enough to be productive around the barn, he'd start dragging us there in the morning, and we'd catch a bus to school and a bus, different bus back in the afternoon
to go to the backstretch.
Yeah, to do afternoon chores. So, you know, we got paid. You know, we learned how to work at a young age, and you know, grew up doing it, and spent our summers working at River Downs. And you know, I left and went to college for a while, decided I wanted to train horses, and I came back, and he actually told me, you know, very unselfishly, that he thought for me to be successful, I should go on and work for some other people. He helped me get a job with Jack Vanberg right away, and then worked for Jack for a while, and then moved on to Wayne Lucas for 5 years, and then went on my own.
Yeah. For people who aren't familiar, I mean, I've been around the game long enough that it has been a notable story. Wayne Lucas had a nice little pipeline of trainers who have gone on to have very good careers. You're just one of them.
Yeah, we were all fortunate to work with one another. You know, Todd kind of came in as I was leaving. George came in, was working with Todd. George had actually started out hot walking with my father at Churchill. So Kieran was my brother-in-law, so he kind of helped me get in the door to begin with. So but we all, you know, we all worked together. Jeff was the, you know, the glue that kept us all there for a long time. So it was a great experience.
And now you've been based in New York for quite a while.
I have. You know, I started on my own in California. I won my first race at Hollywood Park in 92. And then, you know, I had some horses back east. We kind of had a split division, had some at Del Mar and Saratoga that summer. And then I always kept a little presence on the East Coast, but eventually a couple years later, I kind of migrated from California back to the East Coast and made that our base.
I didn't realize you started in California. Was that because of the association with Lucas?
It was because of the association with Team Valor.
Okay.
When I first went on my own, I got a semi, you know, kind of a private job with Team Valor. And then I was able to have some outside horses, which I had some for my longtime client, Lee Lewis, and Ned Evans, Edward P. Evans, gave me a couple horses first, and then that's how I started a relationship with him.
I've been reading a few articles touting how good a meet you're having up here, And I'm curious, you talked a little bit about, in both of the articles I read, the condition book. But before we get to that, just talk. I'm always interested, trainers and jockeys and owners. Do you come up to Saratoga with a goal?
Yeah, I mean, if their first goal is to win a race. But, you know, it's one of those meets, you know, you do start out, you look at the condition book, and you kind of have a good idea whether you're going to at least get off to a good start. You know, you come into the meet, you know, having live conditions, you know, if you know anything, you know what's, you know, whether your horses are going to be live or not. So, you know, I felt pretty good when I was marking down the first book, and then it kind of went into the second book, and I'm like, I still got live horses. You know, we've had trouble getting horses in this last week. I thought we'd have a lot more running this last week, but we just haven't had the right races go. But things like that happen to everybody too. You know, you think you got a really live horse and the race doesn't fill, and now you end up in a spot you didn't want to be in. You know, it can be a very frustrating meet for people when it's not going well, and you got to appreciate it when it does, because it doesn't always go well.
Yeah, for folks who aren't familiar, talk about the condition book and how that plays, because I talk to owners often, owners and trainers, who say, you know, it's been tough because I have the horses that are ready, to just not writing the races for my horses. And so it's often tough, as you say, then you're kind of in a spot where it's not optimal necessarily for the horse, but your horse is ready to go. But just talk about that from a trainer's perspective and how it works out sometimes and not.
For sure. Yeah. And you get rain. We've had obviously a lot of rain, which I'm sure has been frustrating for a lot of people up here. Maybe not Linda, she's enjoying the rain, but you know, I think the other thing is, not only do you have to have the race, you have to have the distance you kind of think is ideal for your horse. You know, you can open up the index and see there's a two other than allowance race on this date, but you want it to be, you know, 7/8 and it's 3/4 and your horse needs 7/8. And you think, okay, well, maybe I'll go in the mile then. Let me look at the long race. Well, it's 1 1/8. So now I don't want to go 1 1/8. I don't want to go 6. So now you got to wait. And you get forced into positions like that. Fortunately, this meet played out a little where the distances fell into line for us, and that makes a difference.
Yeah, as I say, a really nice start to the meet, certainly. And it's a very good Saratoga, and we'll talk about some of those wins. But before we do that, where are you stabled up here?
We're back on the main track here, Barns 10 and 11.
Ah, very good. So do you bring horses back here?
Clearcourt? Yeah. Yeah, we train out there. We've got, you know, it's a great place to train some horses that are a little high strung. And, you know, there's a lot going on the main track here. It's a busy track. And especially when you're coming from Belmont, training on the main track at Belmont, you know, it's ideal. You just don't ever get in traffic. Here, you're always in traffic. So some of those nervous fillies or horse that wants to tie up occasionally, or just a tough horse to train, they do well out here on Clearcourt.
That's what trainers almost unanimously say. It's almost as much mental as physical bringing your horse back here. It's just
no doubt. Yeah.
You keep pastoral.
Yeah. And they don't, you know, I think, you know, they're galloping through the trees. They don't feel like they're, you know, they almost feel like they didn't go to the track, which, you know, you're getting in some training and freshening their mind at the same time.
Yeah. Are you moving horses back and forth during the meet?
We are. Yes. You know, we've, my assistant down at Belmont, Eddie King Jr., has done a great job, and he sent us a couple winners up here. We've been transitioning horses in and out, and we've been making the trek down there on the dark days to check things out. But, you know, we've got to keep it going from both locations. Yes.
Do you keep any horses up here after the season?
No, sir.
Yeah, because for folks who aren't familiar, there is it starts early and ends later than the meet itself. It is open for training, and some folks hang around. Let's talk a little bit about some of the winners you've had and take a look at them. Windy Lee Farm, you won with Into Happiness. We'll go back and watch the stretch run back on August 9th. John Velasquez in the saddle, going to be the number one horse here. Just gutting it out for a nice win. We had Kip in from Windy Lee earlier in the meet. And as I say, you get a nice gutsy win here. And if I'm not mistaken, was this number 1,500?
Actually, I think Spinning Colors was 1,500.
Okay, all right.
Shortly after that, but this was her second win of the meet. You know, this filly, we claimed her back at Belmont, and you know, she just looked like a filly that wanted to run on the outside of horses, and wasn't always getting that opportunity. You know, Johnny's done a great job of of putting her in that position. And, you know, this day, I didn't even think she got that live a pace to run at. The first day, first time she won on opening day, you know, she got a real live pace going 7/8, and, you know, it just kind of played into her hands. You know, I thought this day was really solid effort considering she had to go get them after a slow, fairly slow pace.
And as you say, second win of the meet, she won, I believe that was opening day, the 13th of July. And that was off a claim. So talk about a little bit about the claim. You work with Kip on looking at horses and deciding when to pick one up.
Yeah, Kip's always, you know, anxious and ready to go get one if the opportunity's there. And, you know, that day, you know, the opportunity presented itself, and we went and got her. We had to win a shake. It was a 4-week shake, so we got lucky there. And you know, from there, we just fortunately we didn't have to do that much with her. She was in good shape, and just move forward and pick a spot.
Yeah, that's not a bad claim, a nice claim, and then come up and win two at Saratoga. Certainly got to be happy, thrilled with that. You mentioned Spinning Colors. I pulled up that win as well. This is going back to August 12th, Spinning Colors is the number one horse here. And I'm just curious, because she was coming off a maiden breaker in start number 6. So now this is the second win in a row for her. And as a handicapper, I look at these kind of situations and think maybe the light bulb went on. Is that the case with her? Because it seems like she's gotten better over the last couple of starts.
Yeah, and well, she got on the turf. You know, that's the biggest key, I think. She's a hard-spun filly out of a Spitestown mare, I believe. And, you know, we wanted to get her on the grass last fall. She had run decent on the dirt, but, you know, she wasn't finishing on the dirt. And, you know, we got her. We had every intention to run her in the fall at November at Aqueduct on the turf, and then the turf got canceled prematurely, so we lost that opportunity. We tried her one more time on the dirt, and then, you know, sent her down to Patty Hogan's place in New Jersey, Dr. Hogan, and she had to win her off, came back great, grew some, got stronger, and then once she hit the turf this spring, you could just see a difference in her mentally.
Yeah, I mean, this is a very nice performance. She wins off the chart margin there, a couple of lengths, and had a little trouble in the race, too. I mean,
she had to wait for some room.
Yeah, so that was a certainly a nice performance. And that was 1,500, you say?
I believe so.
and one of the articles I read said, that's kind of like a participation trophy because those milestones are more 1,000, maybe 2. I'm going to give you 1,500 is pretty good. I was looking. That puts you well into the top 100 all-time of trainer wins. Well, so congratulations.
Thanks. That's great to know. I mean, I did. When somebody first brought it up, I kind of thought, well, 1,500 seems like a halfway point to 2,000. Or, I mean, a halfway point to 3,000. But, you know, you're still 500 away from, to me, the 2,000 milestone, which, you know, hopefully we can achieve someday. But, you know, it, once I got closer, my kids were actually really excited about it. They made the comment when, I think the last week of Belmont, we were eight away from 1,500. One of the kids brought it up, and I said, well, we're not going to win, you know, 8 races at Saratoga. But we ended up winning 1 at Belmont the last weekend, and then, you know, we've won 8 up here. So, you know, got lucky and everything, stars aligned.
Yeah, very good. And again, 1,500 is, I think, a very notable achievement. Also wanted to pull up one more from really just the other day. Katie Davis was on board Alterina. We're going to look, it's a little maiden claimer. This was only her second start, but showed market improvement. We expecting that this day because in the career debut, had run 6th. But comes back with a nice win, as I say, just the other day for Alterina.
Yeah, in her first start, she finished up pretty nice and galloped out well. You know, we had her in here opening day and had to scratch her on the turf that day. And she put in a very nice work on the dirt, you know, just about 10 days before this race. So we decided to go in the dirt race and, you know, we hooked the right group and you know, sometimes that helps, she finished up nice and Katie did a good job on her. She's a very high strung filly. My whole crew's done a great job with her. Oscar Flores has been getting on her. Eddie King Sr., my assistant down below's dad, but we had my assistant here, Casey Hinsdale, who's done a great job this meet, said, you know, she made a comment one day, two men and a pony because they were going out with her. Two men and a pony, and she still got you guys' number because she's just tough. She drags whoever's on her around there, and nobody wants to get her on it 2 days in a row because she's just a challenge every day.
Looked good the other day, though. So, again, there were three of the nice wins and still a few days to go. We'll be rooting for you there. Talk a little bit about, you know, you talked about working with Wayne Lucas. You've been a New York guy for a while. You've seen changes at the New York tracks. Just talk a little bit about that, how New York racing has changed, moved into the 21st century and whatnot.
Well, I mean, it's been a journey. I mean, when we're still going through a lot, yeah. You know, with the changes at Belmont and coming, I guess. And, you know, I think they've made a lot of great moves. You know, the turf courses, they put in the second turf course they're redoing the one turf course at Belmont right now. The inner turf looks like it's being redone. They took the hedge out. But through the years, you know, they've done a good job of, you know, fortunately, I think the revenue from the slots at Aqueduct have helped, you know, to upgrade the barn area a lot. You know, a lot of us got brand new barns, and, you know, the barns have just come in and totally redone them. And, you know, when they're doing that, they work with us as trainers to make sure, you know, you want a window in the stall here. You know, I've got four different windows in my barn. So if for nervous horses, I can work out a way that, you know, put horses in window stalls so they can see one another. But, nice. You know, they're willing to tweak things for each individual trainer's needs.
And they're, you know, looking at a synthetic course at Belmont from a trainer's perspective. What do you think about that? And you spend the, you know, wintertime down in Florida as well, and they have the synthetic, obviously, mm-hmm. option at Gulfstream. For turf racing, I think it's a great move.
Well, I think it, you know, it gives you another option, and some horses really take to it. Some horses don't, or a lot of horses don't. But it's, you know, it definitely, with races coming off the turf, I think,
you that's
know,
where I, think
I
it's
hope
a good
we
option.
Get to still run on the dirt in the winter and that's just an alternative for New York bred horses. But, you know, for the New York bred owners and breeders and people that pay for their horse to be, you know, the New York breds that support this program year round, you know, for them to have that alternative in the winter instead of, you know, like spinning colors, give her the winter off. She might love the Tapita and be a horse that can run over the winter and then get back on the turf in the spring. So, you know, I think it'll present more options and, you know, if it's safer and everything, that's great.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. And as I say, with off the turf races, to me, it's a great option. Just before I let you go, Saratoga, I think, as I talk to people, handicappers, it's different. Everybody is different. There's more of the social aspect, more of folks who I think like to come back to the barn and whatnot. Give us a day in the life of a trainer up here at Saratoga and how it's different from downstate.
Well, downstate, I tell you, downstate, you know, I don't watch every race downstate. You know, we up here, you catch yourself. You don't miss many races in Saratoga. You know, it's kind of one of those things. You have it on at home. You have it on when you go to the restaurant, or you go to a bar, or you go to the store or whatever, wherever you're at.
You're right.
You know, you're going to see a TV on with the races on. So you don't really miss many races. I find myself carrying a program around in my pocket, even if I'm not running anything.
Yeah.
And kind of following along as the day goes on. That's kind of different than downstate. I think, you know, when you get away from the track downstate, you kind of check out for a little while and don't watch every single race necessarily. So that's different. You know, up here, we've got a couple of the kids that live up here now. So, you know, our dark days and stuff, you know, we do have to go down below, but every bit of free time we get, we're grandparents now. So we nice. Get to spend some time with them and, you know, that makes it all worthwhile.
Yeah, no question about it. Mark, again, been chasing you down since early in the meet because it's been a very nice Saratoga, and congratulations on that win number 1500. Good luck going forward, but we appreciate the visit this morning.
Appreciate it, Seth. You do a great job.
I appreciate right. that. Mark Hennig. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, Mike Welch, a little bit later on, Ramon Dominguez. Stay tuned.
Turn your love of racing into savings with equine discounts through the NTRA. purchase through Equine Discounts and receive great savings on well-known brands like John Deere, Sherwin-Williams, Big Ass Fans, Farmers Insurance, and Office Depot. Join thousands of other equine members and support companies that give back to the sport we all love. Call 866-678-4289 or visit equinediscounts.com to start saving today.
Sometimes it pays to go with the flow, to check your worries at the door, to reconnect with your crew, to follow the thrills and the flavor, to roll with it and see where it takes you, to enjoy every minute to its fullest, and to dance like there's no tomorrow. You can do that here at Rivers Casino and Resort Schenectady, where the good times flow.
No matter where in the world you are, the excitement of wagering on horse racing is just a click away. You'll get live streaming, past performances, race replays, our virtual tote board, analysis and selections from professional handicappers, a simple, safe, and secure wagering platform, and best of all, you get track prices. CapitalOTBBet.com. Bet any place, anytime at CapitalOTBBet.com. And be sure to download our new mobile app from the iTunes Store or Google Play.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. As promised before the break, Thursday morning means a visit from the Daily Racing Forum crew. This morning, Mike Welch in to visit us. Mike, good morning.
Good morning.
Anything notable on the workout side of things today?
No. I mean, what was notable was Arcangelo went back to the track today. Mage did too, and I did not get to see Mage. But Arcangelo, I mean, looked like he hadn't run yet. He just was full of energy again, as usual. High-spirited gallop. I mean, Dave Grenning and I were both watching. We were surprised to see him do what he did this morning. He went about a mile and a half. He looked like maybe he wasn't supposed to go that far, and the rider had a little trouble pulling him up down the backstretch, but obviously came out of the race just as sharp as he went in.
Yeah, and we'll talk about that in a moment. But before we do that, whenever you're in, we like to tell people you can find Mike's work, Dave Grenning's work, hard copy or drf.com, but we also tout the workout report. Still a few more days up here, but last time you were in, you alerted us. Workout report will continue downstate as well.
That's the plan right now. Yeah, to go at least through September and into October, and we'll just see how our manpower situation goes and just kind of evaluate it as we go forward.
Which makes sense because, the last couple of weeks of workouts up here are going to play into down there.
Yeah, for sure, and we'll have some coverage We'll have coverage at Belmont as well when everybody gets back downstate for a while, maybe for the whole meet. It just depends on how things work out. At some point, Dave has to leave. I'm going to be I won't be available maybe except for 1 week if I need to come down. Mike Vesey's going to be doing most of the work, so along with Dave. So we'll just see how things go.
But again, great product. Highly recommended, the workout reports via the Daily Racing Form. All right, before we get into preview, let's do a little review. We've mentioned Arcangelo. We'll watch the stretch run here to the Travers. I like Mage.
Well, also, so, but the tip of the hat to Jenna. I mean, she got the job done. I mean, no horse could have looked better or done better over this extended period of time. And again, now he seems to be doing well coming out. So we'll see whether there'll be another start or not between now and the Breeders' Cup. It has not been decided. I'm going to guess she's not going to run him in the Pennsylvania Derby. It comes back a little bit quick, unless he's just so sharp that she has no choice. But, she hasn't committed yet. My guess is he's probably just going to wait and run in the Breeders' Cup. But there's some other spots against older horses if they'd like to try that too along the way to try to cement a horse of the year on. Although I think if, off his body of work, if he were to go and win the Breeders' Cup Classic, he would get it anyway.
And given the older division this year, I don't think that's totally out of the question.
No, I don't think so. No, we'll see. He's still going to probably have to move forward again, but he sure seems capable of it again from just what we saw this morning. He looks like, the more experienced and the more mature he gets, the better he's going to get as the year progresses. So I'm looking forward to seeing him.
Yeah, you talk about the more mature he gets. It was funny in the post-race press conference they held back in the jockeys room, the owner was saying, yeah, you know, we thought he might need a little more time. We were planning to maybe start him in May or June and then change those plans and good thing they did.
He trained real well all winter last year at Gulfstream Park, and he shouldn't have lost either of those first couple of races. He got tough trips both times, and they were shorter races. Obviously, the further the better for him. But, he caught our eye early last winter, and never would have thought if you had asked me in February or January if I thought he would be the Belmont Stakes and Travers winner, I probably would have said, I don't know about that. But you can see the improvement in him. And the difference now than back then when he was very fast. He could work 59 and change back last winter like nothing. And now he's learned to temper that speed and just rate and carry that run on and on and on and on. And you can see it in the morning when he works. You can see it in the morning when he gallops. And you obviously can see it in the afternoon when he runs.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what they do choose to do because they certainly were successful off the Belmont to Travers layoff. So what'll be next before the Breeders' Cup? A couple more from last Saturday. We'll take a look at the Forego and Gunite. Obviously meets up with Elite Power in here and turns the tables and does it pretty convincingly. Elite Power makes it a little bit of a late run, but Gunite looked pretty good on Saturday. Your thoughts there?
Yeah, you know, to his credit, this horse just shows up and tries hard every time. And I know Steve was looking forward to getting another shot at Elite Power after the last one, and he was able to turn the trick. Bill Mott said, I've probably seen Elite Power run better than he ran the other day, but, he tipped his hat to Gunite. He beat him fair and square, and I'm sure we'll see him, everything goes well. We'll see him down the road again in the Breeders' Cup.
Echo Zulu also with a big effort for Steve Asmussen on Saturday and the second big effort of the meet for Echo Zulu.
No, she's just unbelievable. She's just so fast. And I think she has worked with Gunite several times and has been, maybe arguably the better of the pair in the morning when they run against each other. And like Steve said, she's just too fast for the rest of these fillies. And she's definitely the leader. I mean, that's a really nice horse. She's beating there. She's beating the champ, Goodnight Allen. In fact, Steve Asmussen beat two champs in about an hour's span, Elite Power and Goodnight Olive. So, you know, what a great day for him. He almost pulled off the hat trick with Disarm. Yeah, he would have been beaten three champs if he had done it, because Forte was in that field as well, the reigning two-year-old champ. But he ran a super race, too. It was a huge day for the Asmussen
bar. Yeah, no question about it. All right, let's do a little preview. We've done some review, and coming up tomorrow, the Saranac. I talk about it quite often. The subdivision I like quite a bit, the three-year-olds on the turf. I think it's fun. I think there are fun races throughout the year at the different venues around the country. Earlier this year, the Hall of Fame was one of those. I like Carl Spackler. I went back to the Maiden Breaker down at Gulfstream back in February, and I thought that was just too good to believe what we saw in the American Turf at Churchill. I was looking for a rebound, and he did it. We're going to take a look at the stretch run here. Carl Spackler convincing in the Hall of Fame. I think he looks tough again tomorrow in the Saranac. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, he's going to be odds on in here. He's picking up some weight. I mean, if that is something that would maybe bother some people, he's the thing that strikes me about this field is there's no speed in it.
Yeah.
And if you look at Carl Spackler back early, I mean, his first start at Gulfstream, which might have even been a better start than his maiden win, because look who beat him, Far Bridge, who's now a grade one winner. I mean, that was the key race of all key races, those two horses coming out of it. Obviously, Carl Spackler was the one to beat. I wouldn't be surprised to see him right up close to the lead near. I know last time he came from near the rear of the field, but there's just no pace in this race that I see stand out on paper. So Chad said that he'll just leave it up to Tyler, and if he's in front and doing it easy, so be it. There was a little give in the ground when he won the Hall of Fame. Hopefully the bad weather's out of here, and by tomorrow at the quarter to three, the turf course will have dried out and be on the firm side. So, and hopefully that bad weather is out of here now for the rest of the meet. We won't have to worry about it again this season.
Yeah, it seems like that's the case looking at the forecast, and I agree. You know, with some turf racing coming up over the weekend, hopefully that is the case. All right, let's go to Saturday. We have a number of stakes races on the closing Saturday of the meet. We'll kick things off taking a look at the Flower Bowl. Uninspiring with a very short field in here. Grade 2 event, 1 3/8 on the grass. McCulloch in here for Chad Brown, Christophe Clement with Parnak. Christophe Clement also with Amazing Grace coming in from Europe. Tamarama, your thoughts on the Flower Bowl?
Well, you know, it's a race to watch. Obviously, there's no betting interest in a race like this for me. If you're playing, you know, horizontal plays, you're probably going to single McCulloch on every ticket. And, you know, maybe you give Amazing Grace a little bit of a chance. She didn't run badly in the Glens Falls behind McCulloch, getting in some trouble there. But unfortunately, the anticipated rematch between McCulloch and Warlike Goddess did not develop. Warlike Goddess came down with a little temperature, missed some training, and trainer Bill Mott opted to pass this spot. So, again, there's no speed in this one either. I mean, there's four horses. None of them really show a lot of speed. If you look at the Alliance of Tamarama coming over from Europe, it says toward rear and that kind of stuff, in rear traffic in one of the races here. So it looks like he's not got a lot of speed either. She doesn't have a lot of speed either. Maybe they're, you know, attempt to try to push her early to try to steal something in here, but hard to go against McCulloch, and Chad Browder would be his eighth Flower Bowl win.
It will be interesting to see going into that first turn of the stretch the first time if somebody does try to, hey, there isn't any speed, let's push ours and see if we can make something happen. Prioress, race number 5 on Saturday. Again, short field in here as well. Dazzling Blue, who had the win streak broken last time in the victory ride, running second behind the ill-fated Maple Leaf Mel. Dazzling Blue for Brad Cox and Judd Mott. Kind of seems to have an edge in here. Alva Star might be interesting coming in from out of town. Your thoughts on the Prioress?
Yeah, again, not much of a betting race. Dazzling Blue is probably going to be a short price favorite. Got a perfect post, going to sit outside, can do it, and you know, Joel could do whatever he wants here. He could maybe send her the lead if she breaks well, or he could just stalk to see what happens. There is a lot of speed inside her, so I'm guessing she might just try to stalk like she did in the victory ride, and obviously got beat by terrific horse in Maple Leaf Mel that day. Jersey Pearl didn't run terrible in the test, and has some speed from the rail herself. I ran a big number, two starts back at Ellis Park. You know, again, it's just one of those races where not much value in here from a playing standpoint, but it is a grade two race and a fairly prestigious race at that.
Yeah, and Irad Ortiz on board, Jersey Pearl, and just your thoughts on the human side of things over the next few days. Irad is coming into today, 52 wins over his brother at 33. He's clearly in the lead. The trainer battle could be interesting over the last few days. Chad with 30, Linda with 29.
Yeah, you know, and I haven't taken a good look at how many they're actually, how much ammunition they're bringing to the table.
Well, when I counted last night, I looked, Chad had 23 over the next few days, but Linda had 19.
Yeah, no, Linda's right up there. She doesn't hesitate to run, and, you know, she's got a lot more of the claiming horses. And, you know, in that situation, you could maybe take a little chance, drop one down. If you really want to win the title, you might take some edges in a couple of spots to try to steal a win here or there. So it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. It looked like a week ago Chad was going to run away with it, and Linda's come back on strong. So that is something to look forward to as we move forward the next 5 days.
Yeah, I think that'll be a side story. It'll be fun to watch. All right, the Harvey Pack, one of the stakes also coming up. 4-year-olds and up, going 5.5 on the grass. Dean Reeves and company, Christophe Clement coming back over from Ascot with Big Invasion. A little bit intriguing there. Thin White Duke for former head of the Daily Racing Form, Steve Christ and company. What did you see in the Harvey Pack?
I think it would be very appropriate if the Harvey Pack was won by a horse owned by Steve Christ, because those two kind of seem to go hand in hand a little bit. And, they're both good friends, obviously. Steve, my boss for a while, and Harvey was a great friend of mine as well. So I'd love to see Thin White Duke win it. Another race where, you know, we'll see how it plays out from a pace standpoint. There's no outstanding speed in here, which could, you know, hurt Big Invasion, because his best game is to come from behind. He'll be odds on. And again, you got a short price favorite in a short field. So I, from a wagering standpoint, I don't have much interest in here, but I'll be rooting for the old boss.
That would be kind of a fun connection to the past. And for folks who don't remember, there probably are young fans out there who don't remember Harvey Pack. Go to YouTube and pull up some Harvey Pack.
Oh my God, what a guy.
Yeah. 11th race on Saturday, Jockey Club Gold Cup Grade 1 event. $1 million up for grabs. Rattle and Roll, to me, I've kind of been on board him this 4-year-old season. He was maybe the second tier of stakes company last year as a 3-year-old, but he's really seemed to move nicely in the handicap division this year. Now, ran second, but a pretty good second in the Stephen Foster last time. But he's, as I say, become interesting to me on the handicap division. Proxy comes off the triple-digit buyer win, or Bright Future triple-digit buyer win, and Proxy coming out of the win last time down at Monmouth in a stakes race. Your thoughts in the Jockey Club Gold?
You know, class-wise, Proxy and Rattle and Road are the two top ones in here. Rattle and Road, a model of consistency from the buyer figures. You know, every race is 100 or 101, and he's right there. He never runs a bad race. He's going to be the favorite. He's going to be the horse to beat. Proxy, you know, 2-5 last week, just against an overmatched bunch, in the Monmouth Cup. But, you know, he's proven at the grade one level, and it'll be interesting to see what kind of strategy they use. Breaking from the rail, his best races in graded company have been from behind. Last time he went to the lead, but again, it was against an overmatched field. But from the inside post, he may want to, you know, use them a little bit early to get some position and to run down the home stretch there the first time. Bright Future has been best known as Forte's workout partner for most of the year. I mean, he was before the Derby. I think he was again before the Travers. But, you know, he jumped up with a huge effort. Just, you put a line through the Brooklyn, and his form isn't that bad earlier this season. So he looks like a horse that could maybe try to steal this one going 1.25 miles. He's obviously a question mark at the distance. The 1.5 mile race didn't work out well at all, but to me, that's just a throw out. But he handled 1.125 well. And if he can get loose on the lead, if you're looking for a little value in here, you want to try to beat those two, he might be one to look at. And Clapton, in new hands, was purchased privately just a couple of weeks ago. He's had one work for the New Connections here. I think his main goal going down the road is not even the Breeders' Cup, but it's to go to Saudi next year for the big races there because of the new connections. But he's in good form. You know, he ran, you know, he's run well the last few times. He was no match for Rattle and Roll in the Pimlico Special. But I think he should be a factor in here. So, again, you're looking at probably a big favorite and a solid second choice in the betting here, Rattle and Roll and Proxy.
Yeah, bright feature. Whenever I look at that kind of a situation with a step forward like that, first start of the track, a kind of budding horse for course, maybe.
Yeah, he just has to, you know, he has to prove he can class up with these kind of horses. You know, he's held his own with Forte in the morning, but these are older horses too. So we'll see how it works out.
Mike, appreciate it. What's your schedule like going forward? When you head back to home base down in Florida?
I'm heading back to Florida pretty much right after the meet. They have their first leg of their sire series for the 2-year-olds the Saturday after Labor Day. So I'll be back there for that. And then I'll just be down there until heading to the Breeders' Cup. I'll go out about 2 weeks ahead of time to Santa Anita to try to get things ready for the clock report out there. And looking forward to seeing Arcangelo, who will probably precede me to Santa Anita. That's the plan right now, to get him out there maybe 3 or 4 weeks in advance at least. So he'll have had some work over the track before I get there, but looking forward to seeing how he's progressed by the time we get out there, hoping everything goes well for everybody and all the stars align and come together on Breeders' Cup weekend.
Travel safe, certainly. Say hello to all the folks down at, well, I've seen a lot of them up here. Dave Joseph was here. Phil was here.
Mark Spencer was here. We had a lot of the Gulfstream gang up here briefly, you know, quick run through, but it was good to see them.
Yeah, but again, we'll look forward to your reports from the Breeders' Cup. Mike doing a lot of the workout information before many of the big races, Triple Crown races and Breeders' Cup and whatnot, and all season long up here at Saratoga, you and Dave and the team doing great work on the workout report. So we appreciate that. We appreciate you and Dave coming in throughout the meet, last visit, obviously, here. So, again, really appreciate you guys coming in. Good information, good insights. And as I say, travel safe, and thanks for stopping by.
My pleasure. Look forward to coming back here and being in the seat again a year from now.
Looking forward to it. All right, we'll take a break. He's in the house. It's Ramon Dominguez. We'll talk a little Saratoga with Ramon and more right after this. Stay tuned.
Why just watch the races when you can be in the middle of the action? For nearly 20 years, Bonaventure Stables' share-based ownership program has made thoroughbred ownership affordable for the everyday fan. Ownerships of 5 and 10% are now available on a nice selection of horses. As a partial owner with Bonaventure Stables, you'll enjoy all the benefits afforded every owner. Visit with your horse in the private stable area. Greet the trainers and jockeys in the paddock. And when your horse wins, savor the moment in the winner's circle at Saratoga, Belmont, Aqueduct, or wherever you bring home the prize. Based in historic Saratoga Springs, Bonaventure Stables has been training winners and creating memories since 2005. Learn more, see available horses, and meet our team at bonaventurestables.com.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. As promised before the break, joined now by our friend Ramon Dominguez. I said earlier, I was at some gatherings early in the season, and Ramon was there and had some really interesting conversations. I thought at the time we should bring Ramon over. And then yesterday, you and Umberto drove by me in the car, and I thought, oh, let me get in touch, and we'll schedule something for this morning. So appreciate the visit.
Thank you for having me, Seth. Good morning.
Folks obviously are very familiar with you and Saratoga. You had great wins up here as well as the rest of the career. But for folks who don't know your background, talk a little bit about how you got into the game.
I got into the game because the first time I came to the racetrack with my dad and I watched a live race, and I knew right then and there that I was going to become a jockey. I didn't know exactly how. And a couple of years went by, and I continued talking about it. And my parents actually enrolled me in a show jumping school to kind of take my mind away from riding races, because that's not what they wanted me to do. They felt like it was very dangerous, and they wanted me to perhaps be a doctor. And so I did a show jumping for a year, and that was a great foundation for me in terms of riding. And then shortly after, I found out that there was a training center for thoroughbreds nearby, and I started going there, and the rest is history.
Your family wasn't in racing?
They were not in terms of the actual contact with the horse. They never owned horses. They never trained or anything like that. But my dad, the reason I went to the track with my dad is because he, as well as my grandfather, first had it, passed it to him, a machine that people will go back in the days and physically bet at the Pick Six. I'm from Venezuela, and that's a big game where people would, there will be a long line, and it's sort of similar to the lottery, where people will want to hit a big Pick Six and you know, change their financial status. So there will be long lines, and after the day of work, typically on Saturdays, we'll go to the racetrack and return this machine, and that's how I went to the racetrack. But yeah, that was the only connection with racing or horses. It was through my dad, but on the betting aspect of it.
So you had some kind of an established career, I'm assuming, before you came to the United States.
I did. Back in the days, and this changes from time to time, in Venezuela, in order to become a professional jockey or have a professional license, there was no jockey school when I tried to become a jockey. So I had to go to 2-3 different training centers, and I learned the basics. But from there, I moved to what we call a bush track, really a remote racetrack. And I rode there for a few months. And then I was able to, they organized last minute a jockey a promotion with some of the jockeys who were leading jockeys in these smaller tracks. And I was able to get in there. And I rode for a year as an apprentice. And then I came to the United States. So although I had some experience in terms of riding horses, races was a different thing, where I had won a few races, but I was very, very green.
So when you came to the United States, did you still have an apprentice allowance?
I still had an apprentice allowance for a few months, because the way it works is that from the time that you win your fifth race, that's when your apprenticeship starts running. So I have, I don't know, 5 months or 4 months left with my apprenticeship.
Do you remember the first win?
I sure remember the first win. It was in 1995 at Hialeah. Philly, trained by Angel Medina, called Solo Moon Dance.
Very good. Everybody seems to remember that first. I can certainly understand why. Talk a little bit about how you transitioned from there, and then eventually came up and rode in New York.
So, yes, that was a process, because my agent at the time, Steve Rochin, the great Steve Rochin, he was based in Maryland, and I was going between Maryland and Delaware. We changed our home from those two places because I was riding in Maryland and Delaware. And slowly we started gaining more and more business and more opportunities and doing very well. And although it was tempting to come to New York, between family that we were based there, but also we felt like it wasn't the right time yet.
Yeah.
And we started to come, instead of going to Laurel Park in the winter, we started to come to Aqueduct. And we did that for a couple of years, always returning back for the summer to whether Delaware or Maryland or both. And but it's funny, because you sort of preparing your mind. But when the time came for us to come full time to New York, it wasn't any longer our decision. The decision was made for us. It was a no-brainer. We had to stay. And the one thing I do remember thinking and hearing the comments from people who I respect, horsemen, sometimes saying, well, you did well in Aqueduct in the winter, but when the big guys come back from Florida, everything changes. It's going to be much tougher. And I continue working, doing the same thing. And I think because of what we created in terms of all the trainers that we were riding for, which was very diverse. They gave us the opportunity to continue winning races and really continue leading the standings. So, and up to that time, I don't think that it was that often that a jockey that dominated in the winter was going to do well in the other months.
And we're up here at Saratoga, and as I said when I topped it off, fans up here certainly remember and appreciate the great career you had, but I had to pull up, you know, one of the Saratoga wins, and one of them is a notable win as well, because it's the Travers from 2012. You're on board Alpha. You make a nice late run to get to Golden Ticket, but they had to have two canoes that year, as it is a dead heat. Talk a little bit about and remember the 2012 Travers, the dead heat aboard Alpha.
I should remember, and that race was won in big part because of the horse that finished there on the outside with Junior Alvarado, Falcon something, I forgot his name.
Fast Falcon.
When my horse, it wasn't me, I didn't realize that there was a horse coming on the outside. When Alpha sensed or saw that this horse was coming on the outside, that is all he needed to go on. And he didn't want to let him pass him. And that's the reason we did hit it. And I tell you, turning for home, I'm getting after my horse, hand riding and hitting him. I wasn't getting a whole lot of response at that point, and I felt like my chances to win were really slim. And as we got closer to the wire, things look even worse. And inside the eighth pole, I'm still working on my horse and trying to be active on top of him. And when this horse, when he sensed this horse coming, I actually kind of stopped hitting and hand riding a lot because this horse was doing the work for me. And I didn't really want to interfere with the horse because I was gaining the momentum that I was looking for from a totally different, unexpected source. But either way, that's really what pushed me to the heat.
Yeah, and again, a Travers victory up here at Saratoga, always notable, but that one goes down in the record books as the dead heat. And as they say, for folks who aren't familiar, they paint the canoe and the lake, the colors of the Travers winner. So that year, two canoes out there, kind of notable. Another thing I pulled up, this was a video I actually shot going back to 2012. This was early September. It was the end of the meet. And it's you walking from the clubhouse back to the jockey's room and the crowd going berserk. Why? You had six victories that day, which then gave you the record number of victories at the meet at that time of 66. As I say, I fired up my camera because it was just phenomenal all the way back, crowds, and you're signing autographs and taking pictures. Just remember the day a little bit.
Sure. And I have to say that it was not long ago that I learned that you actually were the one who took this video, because this video, I think they even posted it on national television.
Breeders, NBC show on the Breeders Cup. Yep.
But it was you that one that recorded this. So what a day that was, because as you mentioned, it was not only the second time in the meet that I won six races in a day, but you could not make this happen even if you planned to, that race actually being my sixth win of the day. And a New York Red that won an open company stake, and that was the new record in terms of a win for the meet. So what an amazing victory, what an amazing day and moment. So, yes, it's one of those that pinched me because it was unreal. And really, it looked like I was going to pass the horse that was in front with Joel Rosario. And this horse came back, and it was for a moment. Wasn't clear if I was going to win, but, yeah.
And reflect a little bit, because I always say it, the fans up here are so great and so knowledgeable. And I think this kind of reflects that you got this, that kind of response just shows everybody was aware of what this meant.
So true. And honestly, like when it comes to winning a race, even a big race, you hear the crowd, but you're so zoning in what you're doing and still on top of the horse, making sure that he's walking to the winner's circle. Let's just put that as an example. And here, as you're coming back, I mean, a lot of times you win a big race and people clap, but it was different. People were really just happy and enjoying the moment, just as if they were part of the victory as well. And they knew that it was a big deal to win my sixth race in the day. So it felt really special. And as we can see in the video, I had to stop quite a few times because I wanted to get a picture taken with Mitch, which it was a pleasure and an honor to be in that position.
No, I knew I had to fire up the camera when I saw that line of people out there. It was just, and as they say, that's a reflection of Saratoga and the fans up here. Talk a little bit about, because you now live in Saratoga, you elected to live here. So I'm assuming if on a list of favorite tracks, Saratoga has to be right up there.
Saratoga is definitely on top of that list. And I mean, I can talk about so many different tracks that for different reasons are special to me. But Saratoga is just a wonderful, unique place. The experience that fans can have coming here, the proximity with the horses and the jockeys and the racing personalities, but also the atmosphere. You come here and I don't know, it's hard to describe. I think it's one of those things that people have to experience themselves, but all the picnic tables where there's nothing wrong with betting. There is nothing wrong with a gambling aspect. That's a big part why we have racing. But here it goes beyond that, where people can come and actually enjoy the sport, enjoy the races, and as a family. So in just Saratoga itself, that besides the incredible experience at the track, you go across the street, you can go to the National Museum of Racing and Hall of Fame. Yeah. What an amazing place. If our fans who are watching this haven't been there, they must go there. I mean, the film, what it takes to make it to the Hall of Fame, guaranteed to make you cry, yeah, is just beautiful. So, yeah, so many different things here in Saratoga. And it's something that is hard to say bye when the meet's coming to an end, but it's also something that makes us look forward prior to the meet starting because it is beautiful.
What brought you here? What made you settle here, you and your wife Sharon and family?
Yeah, so clearly, since I wasn't going to ride races anymore, there was nothing that was tying us to Long Island, where we were living for obvious reasons, riding at Aqua and Belmont, a big part of the year, and our kids were in school there. Now we had that flexibility to be where we wanted to be, and for the reasons I previously gave, as well as how beautiful the community is here, and the pace of living is so much lower and nicer than other places. I had a conversation with my wife and I said, what keeps us from moving here? And there were reasons that we sort of come up with, well, the kids are just used to going to school there. But things that we, after expanding our conversation, we realized, hey, we can and we should definitely come here. And we already own the home here. And so it was kind of a quick decision and easy decision to make.
Yeah, and then see you around town. I see you out in the park. I'll be doing a little walk. You'll be zipping by me running. And talk a little bit about you obviously you're at the track a lot. You watch the game. We're in the 21st century now. What do you see that has changed, and particularly on the jockey side of things? If anything, what has changed?
Yes. So if I talk about the jockeys, I know. It's not that I feel, I know that the profession itself, the physical aspect of the mechanical aspect of riding race horses have been elevated. These guys, these young riders are extremely talented. At the same time, there has to be a balance between what you do on top of the horse and what you choose to do in terms of how you handle the race. There are some corrections that need to be made, and I'm talking just in general. Jockeys who are crossing this line of there are the written rules and the unwritten rules, and they're equally important. So we need to make sure that we maintain the game clean in the profession, where we do this the best way possible for everybody, the fans, the horses, the jockeys. So I think that there are some corrections that need to take place, but I'm pretty optimistic that this will happen. And when I take it a little bit broader, the sport is something that has been some positive changes taking place in the last 10, 15 years. When we talk about aftercare, something that really didn't exist 20 years ago, and now there are so many different organizations doing a great job. I think that still that needs to be elevated, but I feel like there is enough work being done for that to happen. We need to talk about, unfortunately, as amazing as this meet is, it has been in some way shadowed by some of the injuries that we have had, something that is takes the wind out of you. But again, if we go statistically speaking, I was taking a look at the NTRA website, and in the last 15 years, these numbers of catastrophic injuries in the country has decreased a lot.
Yeah,
I mean, we're talking about 1.5 per 1,000 starters. So there has been a lot of progress, and what we experience here is not normal. And I'm very optimistic that the right measures and the right approach is taking place right now to determine what happened and if there was a common denominator. If so, how can we solve it? So any industry has their trials and tribulations and their obstacles, and we're no different. But I know there are a lot of people like you and I who cares about this and will do anything needed to make sure that racing is not only surviving but thriving.
Yeah, well said. And just update us on what you're up to these days. As I say, I know you're a runner, and how different are you than your riding weight?
I weigh 120 pounds right now, give or take a 20. So that's a few more pounds from when I was riding, but something that is not drastically different, where I needed different clothes or anything like that. So I feel very good, and running keeps me physically fit and mentally sane.
How many races do you legitimate races are you in a year?
In a year, I probably run, I'll say around 10 races or 12 races. So yeah, it's something that I very much enjoy. There is so many similarities between running a race on foot and riding a race. And I hate to say it, but I have made a lot of the same mistakes that I made early in my career, running a race, thinking that I'm going to go out too fast and then I can continue at that pace. So little things like that, but the whole methodology or the whole strategy behind is pretty similar. So I absolutely love it.
That's interesting. And as I say, I saw you in the cart yesterday with Umberto Chavez from the Chaplaincy. I know you do some work with them, the TRF, the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation, you and your wife as well, Sharon, involved in some of the nice charities involved with the sport.
Yes, I mean, we were so blessed to be able to contribute to these organizations because they are, as it has been said one too many times, but really it is the backbone of our sport, and it's so awesome. I mean, last night I went with my wife. We were home after the races, and she mentioned to me, she said, why don't we go to Bingo Night? So Bingo Night, there's a pavilion that John Hendrickson created this program 15 years ago, and we had a blast. So I sat on the table with some of the grooms that I recognized, playing bingo, and everybody was, I was a bad loser. Are you kidding me? Already somebody hit the bingo. And about the prizes that they were getting, it was amazing. Again, Joe Henderson, thank you so much for an amazing contribution, because they have food, they give bicycles, TVs, you name it, and it's a great family time.
Yeah, that has been a great addition. It was right across the street near the rec hall. Tuesday night, I was over for the soccer finale over there. There was a big crowd over there that night as well. And a great job is done for the backstretch people up here at Saratoga with some various organizations. I know NYTHA is involved in a lot of that as well, but the Chaplaincy and Michael Dubb and his outfit over there as well. And they do great work for, as I say, the backbone of the industry, the backstretch people.
So true.
Appreciate your stopping by. I thought we'd have to have you in here and have a little conversation, see what you're up to, because one of the fan favorites up here at Saratoga. So, Ramon, appreciate the visit.
My pleasure. Thank you, Seth.
All right. We will wrap it up for this Thursday morning here on Racing Across America. We head into a Thursday afternoon with some really nice weather. So don't forget, low rollers today down at the Clubhouse Racebook. We have a number of events as well. So keep that all in mind for this Thursday. But as far as Friday, we'll be back in for the morning programming, 9 a.m. for the Handicapper Support, 10 a.m. for Racing Across America. So we look forward to you joining us tomorrow as we're counting things down. But we'll be back tomorrow morning, 9 a.m. for more here on OTB TV morning programming. See you then.
You've been watching Racing Across America. Racing Across America has been brought to you by Pennell's Restaurant, a Saratoga tradition since 1922. 284 Jefferson Street, Saratoga, just minutes from the track. And the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany. When you can't make it to the track, make it to the Clubhouse Racebook.